Hello, everybody. Welcome to the SoxProspects.com podcast, the web's number one source for information on the Boston Red Sox farm system. From top to bottom, from Fort Myers to Pawtucket, and all stops in between, including Frederick, Maryland. Thank you for the listen. My name is Chris Hatfield. I'm the executive editor of SoxProspects.com, and I'm joined, as always, by our director of scouting, not wearing a quarter zip today, Mr. Ian Kundle. Ian, pretty slow couple of weeks here. Not much happening.
Yeah, it's been tough. Like, all the weather has made it so I can't get to many games. And other than that, there's nothing going on in the baseball world. So, you know, yeah. It's been a – oh, wait, no, that's a lie.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot happening.
And I've made – we've both been able to make it through games, even with the bad weather and the scheduling issues this year. So it's been an interesting couple of weeks, and I think we have a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, we do have a lot to talk about. So – this might be a long one, folks. Bear with us. Thank you, as always, for listening. We, of course, want to give a shout-out to our $5 level Patreon supporters. That'd be Sox Signatures, Kirby Miller, Kyle Costigan, Tyler Woodrall, Jeff Traynor, David Nardone, Tim Harding, Ernest Shermer, Bill Stanton, Deb Kendall. You have Evan Kirkwood, Chris Fox, James O'Hara, Nathan Kenyon, Andrew Wallen, Nundle Martin, Joe Corkery, Browns of Safety School, and our newest $5 level contributor, Ben Burnett, who did not choose to make fun of my alma mater. Thank you, sir. Thank you all for your support. Patreon.com/SoxProspects, where you can get access to exclusive content. The Patreon game updates are in full swing. Ian recorded one this week from Pawtucket. I recorded one yesterday after a doubleheader in Frederick watching the Salem Red Sox. Didn't do one today because we had to hop on here for the podcast because we have a ton to talk about, as I mentioned. The system's number one prospect is in Boston, or I guess in Tampa to be, or St. Petersburg to be more specific. Blake Swihart got DFA'd and traded. I have thoughts. The Red Sox were in panic mode, but the Red Sox are currently playing as we speak. They're up 4-3 in the bottom of the 11th. Ryan Brazier is on for the save. Let's see. Ian saw Pawtucket. I saw Salem. There's a lot going on. Ian, things are happening. It's a busy time. Where would you like to start? I'll give you the choice between Michael Chavis, Boston Red Sox, or Blake Swihart, Arizona Diamondback.
I feel like Chavis, Boston Red Sox, is probably the most noteworthy thing to happen, given he's the system's number one prospect. And that's probably a good place to start.
It is, because I have to find my Twitter rant, I just realized, too. But, I mean, at any rate, let's... Michael Chavis called up to the Boston Red Sox on the 19th. That's Friday, along with Zhu Wei Lin. The Red Sox placed Eduardo Nunez on the injured list, and that's important because we'll explain this to you, because I don't know about you, Ian, my first take, I think this might have been yours too, is, oh dear God, they're in panic mode.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Well, I saw Chavis like 2 days before then, and it was like, and they actually asked.
Well, why don't you let's start with that. Let's start with you saw Chavis. Tell us what you saw Chavis on Wednesday. You saw a doubleheader in Pawtucket, yeah. And then we'll go from there, because there's a reason Chavis got called up that I don't think I was giving appropriate weight at first.
Right. And
more sense.
Because mine was weird. So I saw Chavis, and I'll get to what I saw in 1 second, but then Cora came out that evening and was asked about him.
Right.
And was like,
no,
yeah, he's not coming up. He's got to work on his defense, blah, 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 which makes sense with what I saw.
Yes.
That he's up 2 days later. And like the jerk that I am, I went on a podcast that we recorded the night before that published Friday and talked about how Michael Chavis wasn't coming up anytime soon because he needs to work on his defense, and he does. And they talked. It was quite the turn of events. But anyway, so I saw Chavis in Pawtucket for a doubleheader against Toronto's AAA affiliate featuring one Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who hit some very long home runs during the series.
Is he related to Vlad Guerrero, the Hall of Famer?
No.
Okay.
They just have the same name.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah. So Chavis, he at the plate, he was like 1-for-6. He had a double. He's got power. We kind of know what he is at the plate. The defensive stuff was more. And I will say at the plate, actually, I mentioned this on Twitter when he was called up. Chavis this year, I've noticed that the quality of at bats he's putting together are a lot better than I've seen him in past years. He's actually starting to like. It's kind of a cliche way to say it, but they're quote unquote more professional at bats is how I would describe them. Mm-hmm. He's getting himself in hitters' counts more and not trying to like cheat to ambush a fastball early in the count. And I kind of think you're seeing that carry over into his big league debut these first couple of games. Like the at bat he had against Jose Alvarado just now in the 11th inning, where he worked a walk. I think it was a 6-pitch walk against Alvarado, who's probably one of the top like 5 relievers in all of baseball.
Yeah.
And his first at bat, too, when he got down 1-2, shortened up, got a fastball, or his first hit, he got a fastball down in the zone, which is his sweet spot, and was able to drive it hard to center field. Like things like that, he's doing. Whereas in past, you know, he would get very aggressive early, maybe switch it swing at a fastball that's a little out of the hitter's zone and weakly ground out on it or pop it up, just trying to make something happen. Whereas this year, he just seems more patient, and I've just been very encouraged by that. And that kind of was the case, even though he was only 1-for-6 in the thing. In the doubleheader, he still was working at bats and grinding things out.
Yeah. By the way, just Red Sox have swept the Tampa Bay Rays.
Oh, so it's no more panic mode.
No more panic mode.
Okay, just to make sure. And it's all Sandy Leon, right?
It's all Sandy. Oh. Give me a
minute. But anyway, so defensively is where I want to talk about, because this was the first time I'd seen Chavis in game action at second base. And I think this was his 6th or 5th start of his career at second base. And he didn't really have to do much in the game. I think he made like a line. He had a line drive that was hit right at him. You know, you had to react to it quickly because it was hard hit, but whatever. He made all the routine plays. He didn't really have to do anything noteworthy. Then in the second game, he shifted over to third base. And at third base, ironically enough, he had 2 plays that kind of like summed up why I don't think he's a third baseman. And frankly, I would not be surprised if he goes back down to the minors, the Red Sox just scrap third base entirely and make him a first baseman / second baseman. But the first one was just a ground ball, routine ground ball that he had to take one. If he slid one step to his right, he would have got in front of it and just, you know, fielded it normally and thrown to first base. And instead of doing that, he did something which he kind of has a tendency to do, which is tries to backhand the ball and just kind of get a little lazy on it. And he just tried to backhand it, didn't, you know, get in front of it, get around the ball. And then he just tried to rely on his arm to get the ball over to first base and ended up throwing it directly into the ground about 25 feet in front of him. Luckily, Josh Ockman was able to scoop it out at first base and end the inning. But it was just one of those things where you can't make that play at the big league level. You know, you can't be sloppy and you let, you know, your footwork, because that's what leads to errors. And if he thinks the game speed at AAA is fast, just wait till he gets to the major league level. And then the second one was, it was actually what started the rally that ultimately led to Pawtucket losing after being up 4-0 entering the 7th inning, I guess, because it's a doubleheader. It's ground ball down the line, and it was probably 2 crossover steps and a dive, and it was not close to the line, but you know, it was reasonably hard hit, but it was still a play that even an average third baseman would keep on the infield. But Chavis just didn't. When he dove, he didn't even get close to the ball, and it was something where, you know, it's a little play, but all of a sudden, you know, you've got a runner on second base to start the inning with no outs versus a runner on first base. And after that, the floodgates just flew open, and I think they gave up like 5 runs in that inning and ended up losing. And it's just a small play. It's just a very nuanced thing, but it's the type of play that just can't happen. And, you know, we've obviously – Rafael Devers isn't the greatest defensive third baseman in the league, and he's had his issues. But it's a play where he still has the range to get there, whereas Chavis's lateral range, especially going to his right, is just something that I'm not sure he has. And that's kind of the big question for me. But as someone – I was having a conversation with someone about him at second base – going to his right at second base isn't as big an issue, because obviously, given how much positioning the Red Sox do with shifts and everything, as a second baseman, he's going to be going to his glove more often than not. And that's actually the side I think he has more range to. So that's one kind of arrow in his favor, one of the things that I think works in his favor to potentially transition to more of a primary second baseman or first baseman.
You know, and it's interesting because I think Chavis himself has said, you know, I was a shortstop in high school. I got moved to third base, and it's very different because it's reaction. It's not playing the ball. Whereas he feels almost more comfortable at second base because he is now once again playing the ball as opposed to just reacting. So that all goes to what you were just saying you saw out of Chavis at third base.
Well, exactly. And it's like at second base, he has the time to think about it. It's not as instinctual where, you know, like an instinctual third baseman on that ground ball is going to take one crossover step and get right in front of it, surround it, and throw. Mm-hmm. Whereas at second base, you know, you're playing it off of the third, the fourth hop. You have more time to react to the ball. And you actually, as you said, you know, it's more of a natural movement for him. And given that I think he's in much better, I think he's admitted it. He's in better shape than he was in past years in terms of he's less muscular now. He's a lot more athletic. He's not obviously the greatest athlete, not kind of like the quick twitch guy you usually see up the middle. But I think it's passable enough. And now it's just the question is, can he develop those baseball instincts to be able to work, you know, his footwork around the base, that turn, the double play, you know, the more specialized plays that are specific for second base is what he needs to work on. But I mean, we've seen him out before games working with Carlos Fabelis. And I think it really helps him that Carlos Fabelis is up there, because Fabelis is one of the best infield instructors in the system. And being able to work with him right now, you know, even if it's only for a couple weeks, could be huge for his development going forward.
Yeah. And you could tell when a guy is instinctual or not there. I mean, I just saw a couple of games with Garrett Bench playing third base for Salem. And he's another guy who's just not really a great third baseman. You know, it's just the instinct's not there. The arm's not there. It's just, you can see, you know, when you see it. So, now let's, I guess, get into the call-up of Michael Chavis, Ian. And really, if, like I said, at first I thought it was panic. I think that might have been your reaction as well. But the reason Michael Chavis is on the roster right now is he's literally the last healthy infielder on the 40-man.
Yeah, that's what I kind of underrated that. I mentioned it briefly in a tweet, and I never made the connection.
Yeah.
But I think it
shows the lack of depth. And when I read that tweet, I read it as they don't have any other good.
No, I literally meant no one else. No, I literally meant they had no one else. Except I didn't even put it together when I said that. I was like, they do need an infielder.
Because Brock Holt is on the IL.
And this looks.
They thought he was going to come back.
I was just going to say, I saw Brock Holt, and yeah, he's not ready to. He
said he can't see.
He can't. Yeah, you can tell. I'll just do that.
I mean, he got scratched in the eye by his son. They thought he would be back up by this past Friday. They thought he was going to need like 3 days. And it turns out they called it a setback, but they actually pulled him off of his rehab.
Yeah.
Which means like they think he needs more than like 17 more days.
Yeah, because that's what I texted you. I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I hadn't seen something like that in a while.
It means they're stopping the rehab clock because they think he might need the full rehab.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. So he's out for a minute.
He gets the weirdest injuries.
He really does. It's still not as bad as, was it Snell?
Oh, yeah. Well, but that's
smashing a granite.
That's the most first world problem of all time,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, true.
You're trying to move a granite, like, tablet. No, it was in his house. It was his bathroom.
Oh, it was his house? I thought it was the hotel.
Yeah. No. Anyway.
Holt's down. Pedroia, by the way, should never have come off the IL.
Nope.
I'm sorry. This is garbage. Maybe you take him off. I could see, okay, we're going to reward his hard work. We're going to take him off and play him on opening day, then put him back on the IL and send him to Pawtucket. He's clearly not ready. Oh, no, it's in the plan for him to be down for 3 days. Then why did you activate him?
Well, no, I think it's – the problem is, though, and it kind of goes back to the roster construction thing, is they were running a three-man bench, and you can't run a three-man bench when you have no backup outfielder. You have Dustin Pedroia, who can't play every day. You have Eduardo Nunez, who was actually hurt also but still was on the bench. Like, mm-hmm. The whole way, you can hide Pedroia if you're running a four-man bench. You can't do it with a three-man bench.
Yeah, right. Like, you can't do it with a three-man bench with Nunez hurt, and then, like, Benintendi slams a ball off his foot and Jackie Bradley gets the flu.
Well, especially, too, when you're already carrying Sandy Leon, which I'm sure we'll touch on later, versus Blake Swihart, who actually can play other positions. So it's like, so you have Pedroia.
Apparently Christian Vasquez can play second. So.
True. That was fun, actually. But that anyway, and then there's actually more guys, so you want to keep going with
So the Nunez, Holt, Pedroia, all on the IL. And then Tony Renda in Pawtucket is also on the 40-man, would have been the very obvious call-up.
No, he's not on the 40-man, but he could have been added.
That's right. I'm sorry. They could have added him.
Yeah.
You're right. Because he has options, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
He has options, and he's got an opt out.
And they have three open spots. Or, well, two at the time.
Well, two at the time, but now they're back to three because Erasmo Ramirez cleared waivers and got outrated.
Yeah. And then also Mark Hernandez is on the injured list, who we'll talk about later. But yeah.
Oh, and he can go on the 60 in theory.
Yeah. Marco Hernandez is another infield.
Oh, Hernandez. Yeah, I guess that's true. I hadn't thought about him. But like Renda would have been the call. Renda's the guy I forgot about. And it's like, okay, you can put Mike Miller on the 40-man again, or you can just call Chavis up for what they thought was going to be short-term.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not now.
It still could be, but
I mean, how is it at this point, though?
I wouldn't hate running Lynn and Chavis at second base for the foreseeable future because I actually think they complement each other really well.
Yeah, they kind of do.
Because I personally would play Lynn against good righties, basically, and then just play Chavis against lefties and, like, not good righties.
Right.
Because Lynn's obviously the superior defensive option. He provides – I think he brings a lot to the bench, especially with someone like Brock Holt down. Mm-hmm. Given his position versatility, he can play the outfield. I saw him play the outfield. He can do that now. He can play second base, shortstop, third base. He can run a little bit. He's making contact again at a very strong rate, you know, professional at bats, just a solid and bottom of the order guy. And then you bring Chavis in against lefties and against, you know, junk balling righties that he can kind of feast on. And it's a very interesting kind of like platoon, you know, trade-off, which I think could provide them some positive value, which is something they desperately need at the bottom of the lineup.
Yeah. And I'm still not convinced. I mean, people are saying, oh, does this mean Chavis stays up? I don't think there's any chance he stays up. Once they get healthy, he goes back down because he needs the work at second base, especially if you're going to scrap third base, like you said. I wouldn't hate seeing him take fly balls.
No, I wouldn't either.
But
they don't have a backup outfielder on the roster. Well, Lynn's the fourth outfielder. Well, I guess JD.
No, it's JD Martinez, and that's the reason. Yeah. It's JD Martinez. It's the thing that is when you have that starting outfield plus JD Martinez –
hard to carry a fifth
you
guy.
You can configure the starting three guys in any number of ways that, you know, you put Martinez in left, put Martinez in right. Lynn can play the outfield and they'll play him in the outfield. But, so that helps. I mean, in theory, Steve Pierce can play left, but I wouldn't. But they've got a little more flexibility now, and I think that they're fine for the foreseeable future. It's just if one other person goes down, I mean, the only other hitter on the 40 is Sam Travis. I mean, they're going to have to, I guess you add Tony Renda if he comes back, but I look at the Pawtucket roster and there's just Gorkys Hernandez maybe if you need.
He's not hitting well at all. Like, that's what I was saying when that having seen Pawtucket, which we'll touch on, like, there's just not a lot there, for potential big league call-ups other than Chavis. So.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, it works for now. He'll go back down. It's good. He'll get his feet wet at this level for when they call upon him later in the year.
Go ahead.
No, he was destroying it. There's some interesting info out there, by the way. You know, Chavis got off to a very hot start in Pawtucket. J.J. Cooper at Baseball America, go find his Twitter and find the article he put on Baseball America's website. Their AAA level is now using the Major League Baseball. And there was some very interesting findings or very interesting data about how offense is already way
it's ridiculous
up at the AAA level.
Having seen a few games and watched someone on my MLB TV, the ball flies now.
Yeah, it's a different baseball.
And that's something where I hadn't really taken that much stock into it, but thinking about it now, like guys with even like fringy power, you were seeing obviously hit like big home run levels, hitting home run numbers, not big, but like they're hitting home runs at the major league level.
Right.
And now it's like with guys who are in Portland now, you kind of have to reevaluate when they make the jump to Pawtucket, like what's going to go on with their power because it's a completely different game,
well,
more or less.
It's guys in the minors generally.
But now it's AAA is not included in that, like the ball change.
Well, you get a sense earlier, I guess is what it is.
That's what, yeah. So
it is really the thing. You know, I mean, Josh Ockamy is hitting for some pop already, even though he's not really hitting. Or no, he's hitting okay, I guess.
Hitting like 230, I think, like 240.
Ockamy's hitting 238, but with three bombs and three doubles. Chavis had four bombs already. Rusne Castillo's got a couple. Mike Miller's got a couple, a guy who you talked about in your Patreon game update.
Well, so, Mike Miller's raking.
Mike Miller is raking. He almost was almost the player of the week for the first week and a half.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So,
but I think just kind of circling back to Chavis.
Yeah.
This is a really good base for him because it, regardless of how long it lasts, it gives him a taste of what he has coming for him. And as someone like we know, he's got really good makeup. He works extremely hard at his craft. You know, he cares so much about baseball and just about winning. And this is kind of like I think this is good because it's going to give him something to strive for now. You know, he's going to know what it's like to be a big leaguer, even if it's for a week, 2 weeks, whatever. And when he goes back down, he'll know what he needs to work on. You know, they're going to give him specific instructions, I'm sure the infield coaches will, of things to work on. Mm-hmm. And it'll be something that I think helps him in the long run, getting a taste this early, even if I don't think he's necessarily ready.
Yeah, he's definitely not, but I agree with all of that. Let's move on, Ian, to a much calmer, more reasonable subject in which I'll be very relaxed.
I'm just going to mute myself for this one. You can go.
I'm just going to go full Colin Coward.
Yeah.
Full Stephen A. Smith.
This is a monologue coming up, folks.
Well, so now here's the thing, right? And I want you to jump in if you have questions of me, and we can kind of reverse roles a little bit here. But like, let me start with this. I do not think that the loss of Blake Swihart is like at present an enormous loss for the Red Sox roster.
I agree.
Talent-wise, he is probably a backup or a platoon catcher who can
I'm saying I don't think it's a loss talent that much big of a loss talent wise. I think it's just versatility wise is the loss for them right now.
Yes and no, but I'm saying in a just Swihart.
Yes.
Not
yes.
talking about the roster. Okay. Just saying Swihart what he is right now. I'm not saying that at this point Blake Swihart is necessarily even a future major league starting catcher. He could have been. I think the chances are probably.
So he's not Johnny Bench.
25% chance, if that. That's probably generous.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably generous.
I mean, he's 27 now. Like,
well, but, I mean, and as you know, someone have mentioned, that's about when Jason Varitek became a starting catcher. It's not out of the question. It takes a long time to learn that position. I think the problem is that, as I said last year, we got to this point. We might have gotten here anyway is the other caveat I need to say ahead of time, right? Like, we might have gotten here anyway. I understand that too. But the Red Sox did the man no favors. And just to get to the summary of what I said on Twitter, being in the Boston Red Sox organization has been a net negative for Blake Swihart dating back to, like, 2016. So the next time, like, your favorite player doesn't, you know, display blind loyalty to your favorite team the way you do, this kind of thing is why. Okay. Blake Swihart should have asked for a trade like 3 years ago. And let's walk through the history. Okay. Swihart was a first round draft pick in 2011. Outstanding draft that has given us Mookie Betts, Matt Barnes, Jackie Bradley, probably more importantly. That draft is just, again, I always say Travis Shaw, no longer with the Red Sox. I would love to write the oral history of the 2011 draft because it's interesting up and down the line. There's pro football players. There's guys in jail. It's crazy. Comes up. At one point, he is a consensus top 25 prospect in baseball as a catcher. And now let's, you know, I didn't want to put this necessarily on Twitter. This isn't a Ryan LaVarnway prospect where we think the bat will play, which in LaVarnway's case, we were wrong. But the question is whether or not he's going to stay a catcher because he's not a good catcher. Okay. Blake Swihart was a pretty good catcher. Like, he wasn't going to win a gold glove, but like, he was fine back there for a guy who was learning the position, at least as far as I knew, as far as I saw. There were guys, and I think we've talked about this, Ian, and I tweeted this the other day. There were guys who preferred throwing to Swihart over Vasquez in Portland when they were on the same team because Vasquez was in love with his arm. He's got a cannon. We all know this. And he even does this a little bit in the majors too sometimes where he'll like come out of a crouch early to try and backpick a guy and lose a strike for a pitcher, right?
Or he can win a game like yesterday.
Or he could win a game like yesterday. Sure. I mean, for sure. Yeah. No, fair
it was
point.
Just funny that you mentioned that.
Fair point. Like, that's exactly what I was thinking of yesterday. Well, yeah. No, but it's funny because I see that yesterday and I think, oh, crap, please don't start falling in love with your arm again. Glad that happened.
Yeah.
Don't get crazy.
I mean, he hasn't done as much as, like, I think people don't understand. In the minors, he did it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it was ridiculous.
He backpicked guys, like, five guys a game or something. Not, like, actually get them, but try to.
Yeah. And it was got to the point where, like, he was costing his pitchers strikes. But he doesn't do it as much in the big leagues now.
Because it's not double-A runners, right? So, the Blake Swihart Major League experience starts in May 2015. That's when Swihart was called up to Boston for the first time because both Christian Vasquez and Ryan Hannigan wound up on what was then the DL. That was when Vasquez had to undergo Tommy John surgery. So at that point, honestly, it wasn't too much unlike the Michael Chavis call up in that it's like, you know what? He's the next guy up. Let's do this. F it. Whatever. Cool. They were running out of options. He was already on the 40-man because they had to protect him from the Rule 5 draft. Okay. That June, Swihart sprains his foot and winds up himself on the disabled list. He rehabs it and returns to the Red Sox. which is, this is hilarious. The counter move for his coming back off the disabled list is Sandy Leon being designated for assignment. Puts together a nice little run, closes the year hitting 303, 353, 452 from July 20th to October 4th, getting regular playing time. So argument, that's exhibit A for anyone who says he's never hit at the major league level. When he gets a chance to hit, he has hit. He's shown he can hit at the major league level. Not over the course of a full season, but at least in the course of a, what is that, July, August, like a month and a half, getting regular like playing
six,
time.
Six weeks, seven weeks, whatever it was.
Yeah, month and a half. So he enters 2016 as the, penciled in as the starting catcher. Vasquez is going to start in Pawtucket, continuing his Tommy John rehab. Cool. Makes sense to me. Will be interesting to see how they work this out later in the year when Vasquez comes back. At the time, again, this is 2016. This is 3 years ago, right? We're thinking, oh, maybe they'll kind of platoon him. We'll see what happens. This is kind of exciting. 12 days into the season, the Red Sox option Blake Swihart and activate Christian Vasquez. 12 days into the season. What did Christian Vasquez show you in 12 days that showed you that he was ready, that he wasn't ready when you started the season? What did Blake Swihart show you in 12 days that shows you that he should not be the starting catcher? Doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Terrible, terrible management. And by the way, just because we have to frame this in context, Ian, Dave Dombrowski comes in at the end of 2016, right? Does that sound right? You actually muted yourself. Okay, cool.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
And yeah, he came in during the end of the bad year.
Yeah, because that was because they won it in 14. 15, they stunk. Look it up. Anyway.
They won in 13.
Yeah, they won in 13. 14, they stunk, which is why they got the number 7 pick in 15, which was Andrew Benintendi.
Benintendi. And then they were good in 15.
Yep.
Then 16. In 16, they were awful and they got grouped. No. 15, they were awful, and they got groomed in 16, right?
Right. Well, they were, like, mediocre, yeah. So maybe Dombrowski's in at that point, yeah. Just can you look up when Dombrowski comes in?
I think it's 2016.
But it's end of 2015.
Yes, it's end of 2015. Yeah. 2016
so
season
this
was
is
his
the,
first
this
goal.
Is the Dombrowski regime. Okay. Okay, so they make that switch. Doesn't make any sense. But remember, this is the year when they were hoping that Ruste Castillo was going to come in and win the left fielder's job, starting left field job in spring training. But he sucked. He was terrible. So that's the other thing. Everyone who says that Ruste Castillo is like some kind of political prisoner in Pawtucket, he's in Pawtucket because he stunk in the major leagues. Okay, yeah, okay, great. He had a great 2017 in AAA. Good for him. No one's going to, if anybody wanted to pay him his money to start, they'd trade the Red Sox for him. But no one does that because no one thinks he's a starting outfielder. Anyways, the team's left fielders stink. Castillo stunk. Brock Holt was the starting left fielder on opening day. Chris Young, I believe that was the Chris Young year. The left field is a dumpster fire. So they say, hey, we've got an idea. Let's move Swihart to left field. And I know what you all think is coming, okay? We all remember Blake Swihart injures his, his ankle? It was his ankle. Sliding into a wall or something playing left field. And everyone says, oh, it's the Red Sox fault because he doesn't know how to play left field. He's not used to it. Guys, left field is a position with far less injury risk to catcher. I'm not going to knock the Red Sox for the injury. What I will knock the Red Sox for is that Blake Swihart's bat was never supposed to be good enough that he would be a full-time left fielder. His bat was good enough to be a good hitting catcher. Go look at what catchers hit in the major leagues. The bar is not high. The bar for left fielders is nowhere near what he used to be. And I could see if maybe he were raking in the major leagues and they had Vasquez to catch. They said, hey, you know what? We want to get your bat in the lineup and we've got a hole in left. Go play left for a few months while we figure this out. Cool. But moving him there in AAA and calling him back up, crazy. And meanwhile, now you've optioned him. He's been down long enough that he burns an option. Remember that. This comes back into play. Okay. Gets hurt in 2016. Done for the year. In 2017, Swihart comes back. He's in Pawtucket, obviously burning an option. He can't hit. The reason he can't hit is because he's basically changed his swing to compensate for the fact that his legs are still busted. Okay? He tries to compensate for the injury. His swing gets completely screwed up. Happens. But now, in 2017, he has burned his final option. So in 2018, he's out of options. He's got to make the major league club. Alex Cora comes up with an idea. We're going to make him a utility player. He could play all these different positions, even though he has never done so in the minors. They played him a little bit at first base at the end of 2017. He's never played third base. He's never played second base. He played outfield a little bit. Okay, he's athletic. He could probably do it, but he's never done it before. And the first quarter of the season, he gets 32 plate appearances. He's basically a Rule 5 pick. Okay, they're not playing him at all. The only run he gets, despite the fact that at one point in May, the Red Sox catchers in Leon and Vasquez are hitting like 174, 224, 219. Okay, Mitch Moreland has earned his way into the lineup, starting more often at Jackie Bradley Jr.'s expense. Remember, this is when Hanley Ramirez was still the DH. Okay, Swihart caught one inning. He's not being given a chance to catch at all, even though the catchers are a dumpster fire. Okay. He's not getting a chance to play. Between April 1st and July the 7th, he gets 88 plate appearances, and he's not hitting. He's not playing at all. That's why he's not hitting. Okay? On July the 8th, Vasquez goes to the DL. From July the 8th until the end of August, Swihart gets 11 starts 14 games, plays in 22, hits 277, 319, 415. Hey, look, he can hit if you give him the chance. If you give him playing time, he'll hit. Okay, Vasquez returns, and Swihart plays a little bit in September, but he's a complete waste of a roster spot in October. They should have used it on a pinch runner or another relief pitcher or something instead of running their starting pitcher's arms into the ground. And, oh, wait, foreshadowing, look, they all sucked at the beginning of April. Okay, 2018, he's treated like a Rule 5 pick, basically. Coming into this year, three-man situation, Dave Dombrowski acknowledges they cannot go into the year and do that again. Okay. To start the year, the Red Sox designate Sandy Leon for assignment. He clears waivers. Nobody wants Sandy Leon. The catching wizard, the pitcher whisperer, Sandy Leon, nobody wanted him. No one. Do you know why? Because he can't hit, and guys who catch like that are a dime a dozen in the majors. Okay? This isn't like the next, like, Sandy Alomar back there or something, okay? He could call a good game, great. If you've got a guy back there and he can't call a game, have the pitching coach call the game. Have the pitcher help out. Have the pitcher there out there ready to execute a game plan, okay? If that's a problem with Swihart, which we don't even know if that's the problem. I'm just kind of assuming that must be kind of what the problem is, okay? After, let's see, how many games into the season were we in when this all goes down?
18. 17, weren't they 5-13 when it happened, or 6-13?
They would see Sandy Leon. Okay, April the 16th. Okay, so season started on the 4th.
It started. I can tell you right now.
No, the season started on
what day was it? April 13th.
April the 16th.
April the 16th. They were.
No, the season started at the end of March. That's right.
No, it started March 20th.
Okay. So we're, call it 3 weeks into the year, 3.5 weeks into the year.
It was April 13th, you said, or 16th? Yeah, it was just, they had just lost to the Orioles. They just, and they were 6-11.
They were 6-11. Okay, cool. Neat. So they get the bright idea. We need to shake things up. We need to do something. And apparently the entire, like, coaching staff and front office wasn't of one mind on this based on the quotes we've heard. They say, let's recall Sandy Leon. He'll fix the pitchers. The problem with the pitchers is they're missing spots. They're throwing the ball middle, and it's getting crushed. The problem is not Blake Swihart. Blake Swihart had caught 6 games, I think, at that point, and Vasquez had caught 11, I think, is what it was. Or something. Vasquez had caught almost twice as many games. Yet they're going to DFA Blake Swihart and recall Sandy Leon, who wasn't hitting in Pawtucket, lo and behold. Go figure, because he can't hit. He's not going to hit. You can't expect him to hit, okay? To be the backup catcher. So their plan to shake things up is to change the backup catcher, because Sandy Leon is the pitcher binky. DFA Blake Swihart. Now, I will admit, I am not nearly as fired up about this as I was when they did it, because of the fact that they were able to trade Blake Swihart and $500,000 towards the current international free agent signing bonus cap, which only lasts until like the end of June.
And they weren't going to use it.
That they weren't going to use.
Yeah.
For an outfielder from the Diamondbacks, Marcus Walden. Marcus Wilson, thank you.
Marcus Walden is a reliever for the Red Sox.
That's very true, thank you. I'm going to do that a lot, I think.
Yeah.
Wilson is probably going to be a top 20 prospect in the system when we re-rank on May the 1st.
Yeah.
If he's not, he's going to be 21-22.
He's, right. I would say, somewhere in the 17 to 23 range.
Yeah, that sounds right. He'll be somewhere in there. He's not necessarily a future starting outfielder, but he's easily the fourth best outfielder right now behind Jaron Duran, Nick Decker, and Gilberto Jimenez.
Yeah, and there is, like, it's not probably first division, but there's, like, second division ceiling, at least. Yeah.
Had a great year 2 years ago in high A last year.
Correct. Yeah. But, yeah, still, I mean, there's intrigue, which is way more than I thought they were going to get.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. The great year was in low A.
Yeah.
It was in low A. It was
yeah,
in the
but,
Midwest.
But they're, he's an interesting guy, which we'll get to him in a minute. But
got
yeah,
picked two spots after Sam Travis. In that
what,
draft,
six,
by the
69th
way.
Overall in the 2014 draft?
Yeah, it's pretty. It's it was a nice pick. But what? Of course I'm going to go there. So my question, though. What happened between the start of 2017 and now that let them get this kind of trade return that made dicking Blake Swihart around for a year plus worth it? Nothing. Dude, DFA Blake Swihart, April of 2017, or sorry, 2018, and get something for him. They wasted a roster spot. I mean, here's why they did it, and we've talked about this. They have no one else to catch. Last year, they had no one else. It was what, Dan Butler was the next man up? If someone got hurt this year, the next man up is Juan Centeno, which is a step up from Dan Butler, but they had no one else.
Well, and they have no catching depth coming either. Like, no. It's probably the biggest – it's by far the worst position in the system depth-wise, actually. Right. Now that I don't even have to think about it twice. It is.
No, the highest-ranked catcher in the system is probably Cole Kottom, right? He's in the back end of the top 40.
And he's a 22-year-old college guy.
He's in his first – he's in his first
full season. I understand that, but yeah.
Not going to knock the guy for his age. He's made it to Greenville. It's fine.
True.
And he also ended last year early because of a knee injury. So he's where he should be. But again, there's not a lot there. There's nothing there. I mean, Austin Rye is injured. You've got Centeno. You've got, I mean, Jake Romanski's in AAA. The second Rye's healthy, Romanski's probably going to go back on the Phantom DL because then they'll probably either push Rye to Pawtucket or they'll push Oscar Hernandez back to Pawtucket. And let Rye go to Portland. I mean, they just had no depth there. But, like, trade him for a depth guy to keep in Pawtucket. Like, get some value. Clearly there was some value. Dombrowski said the other day that there has been no interest in him. Apparently, they got a reasonable return for him. I mean, it's unreal the way that, you know, look, roster management on the fringes of the roster is not necessarily going – one bad move is not going to cost you a World Series. Several bad moves added up will add up over time and cost you. So, for example, this past week, the Red Sox called Erasmo Ramirez up as part of the series of he came up with Sandy Leon, and the counter moves were optioning Marcus Walden, who's better, and designated Blake Swihart for assignment. Erasmo Ramirez pitched one game in mop-up relief of David Price and then was designated for assignment. Fine, because he clears waivers, you didn't cost yourself depth, and they had reason to think he would clear waivers because, as I reported earlier today, Erasmo Ramirez had a March 25th, it's called an upward mobility clause in his contract. He and Tony Renda each had them, where Tony Renda's was on the 24th, Ramirez's was on the 25th, where basically the Red Sox had to offer, if the Red Sox aren't going to add them to the roster, I think they both were 40-man, but I'd have to check that. If another team would add that player to, say, the 40-man roster, if it's a 40-man upward mobility clause, the Red Sox have to offer. If a team says they will, the Red Sox have a right of refusal and could do it themselves, or they can, like, buy the player out of the contract and sign him to a new contract, basically giving him a raise to stay. We don't know what happened with Ramirez. We're not sure, and that kind of thing doesn't get reported. We know he's still around. My guess is that no one wanted him and they knew that no one would claim him on waivers or had a very good idea no one would claim him on waivers, so it's not that bad. But that said, Ramirez's money now counts against the CBT for the rest of the season. So you've added at least $500,000 to the CBT when you're trying desperately not to go over it to get four innings of mop-up work. And you say, well, they might recall him later in the year. Yes, but to get that one outing in, they could have just, I mean... You had to go with Ramirez. It's just crazy. Call someone else up from Pawtucket who you're already paying $500,000 or something. It's nuts. It's absolutely crazy. And again, small roster moves like that on the fringes don't cost you on their own, but over time they add up and they cost you. So there's that piece of it. The Swihart thing, like I said, at this point they've already – that ship has more or less sailed. But you had an asset who was a top 25 prospect in baseball, consensus, not just like one list. And you screwed around and you got a 40-grade outfield prospect for him, which is a lot. I mean, he's at least a 40-grade if we're ranking him in that range. I mean, that's what Fangraphs
says. Yeah, it's like he's like a like around like a 35, 40. Like, that's what we're looking at. I mean, yeah, with some upside. But yeah, it's just – yeah, it's funny looking back at all like the people – whenever the Red Sox were mentioned at like a big trade at that point, it was all Swihart headlining. It was like Swihart and Henry Owens headlining the package. And right, they ended up keeping both for way too long and got nothing – or
so
got –
I mentioned Cole Hamels.
Yeah, Hamels got, trade, got which, minimal for both.
But the thing is with – I mean, the Hamels deal, you could whine about it. Like, if they trade for Cole Hamels, last year's team is worse because they don't go get both Price and Sale at that point probably. Or is Porcello the guy they wouldn't have gotten?
It changes everything.
It's revisionist history.
It's just the point is that they had these assets and they were very valuable at the time, and they just let them depreciate and depreciate and depreciate without getting anything for them.
And, you know, I mean, people say, you know, I've read a lot of stuff on Twitter in response that didn't make a lot of sense, in part because, you know, Jared Carabas over at Barstool kind of linked to my Twitter rant on the subject. And, you know, the Barstool crowd was out, which is fine. A prospect didn't pan out. Go figure. Like, yeah, not all prospects pan out. But like someone was saying, like, yeah, the Red Sox have a terrible record of developing prospects. Wrong. Look at the lineup. Wrong. The entire outfield, the shortstop, the third baseman, the catcher, like almost the entire roster, the entire lineup is homegrown.
Well, and I think that's the thing a lot of people miss when it comes to prospects is like Blake Swihart is a successful prospect development story. In the fact that he was like the 26th pick and he's been a big leaguer for 4 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Most first round picks don't even make the big leagues.
Right.
Like the fact that Swihart made the big leagues is good. It's just the issue is that, as we said, like there should have been more there. Mm-hmm. And why there wasn't is, you know, you've kind of told the Red Sox side of it in the sense of, you know, where they screwed around. But, you know, obviously also there's Swihart also, something went wrong there. You know, was it the Red Sox? Was it him? Like, we don't know exactly like where it went wrong, but something stopped him from reaching his potential.
Right.
And that's like the disappointing thing right there.
Well, to this point, I mean, we'll see what he does with the Diamondbacks, who apparently are not even going to play him at catcher because they've got like five catchers on the roster now. And they've got a pretty good prospect of their own in Carson Kelly, who I think is their catcher of the future.
Well, he was like the centerpiece of the Paul Goldschmidt trade, so you kind of have to make him good.
Right, and I think that it's not the lack of faith in him as a catcher.
No.
It's just that they have like three other guys. I remember because I've got Kelly on one of my fantasy teams. I'm like, why aren't they playing him? Oh, because they've got three catchers.
Yeah, they're carrying it's like him, Jeff Mathis, and Alex Avila, and then Christian Walker's a catcher, but he's playing first base. And like
John Ryan Murphy.
Oh, is that... Yeah, so they have a lot of catchers.
Yeah, it's but yeah.
Anyway, I think with
just frustrating.
Obviously, the way it ended is very disappointing. They were able to get something from him, which is good. And from what I understand, there were multiple teams interested. So that's kind of what led to this. But that does beg the question of the Dombrowski line, like when they DFA'd him, was really weird. Where he was like, what did he say? It was like, you know, we've been trying to trade him for 2 years now or something.
And like it was basically like dating back to 2017.
Yeah.
Like someone asked him if there'd been trade interest and he was just like, there has not been.
Which I don't buy that at all. But
what?
Yeah, that doesn't make any
but
sense.
But all of a sudden you can get Marcus Wilson for him, which is not like you're getting Vlad Jr. for him, but like
still, Marcus Wilson's an interesting prospect. But it's
better
like,
than they got for Buchholz.
I don't get that. But anyway, I don't know. It's just I'm kinda glad it's over in the sense that, you know, I like Blake Swihart as a player. I'm not sure what he is now, but I think he needs a fresh start, and I think I've been saying it on the podcast for a while multiple years now that he needs to get traded for him. That's probably the best thing that can happen for him. You know, he's not gonna be playing every day out there, but he'll get a chance to kind of hopefully his back and get going and see what happens from there. Mm-hmm. And now we kind of have clarity with the Red Sox because it's Sandy Leone and Christian Vasquez's show. There's no one else coming. You know, there's no reinforcements coming to catcher anymore. It's by hook or by crook. This is what you're stuck with. You know, Christian Vasquez seems to have started to hit for power, which is really weird. But he's selling out for power. I mean, he's not hitting anything else. And then Sandy Leone can't hit his way out of a paper bag. But that's, you know, he is what he is. You know, he can catch a good game, whatever. But I think the thing that's annoying to me is that when they made the move, the timing of the move, like, they kind of scapegoated Swihart. And it was they obviously aren't going to come out and say it, but they're kind of basically saying, like, Blake Swihart's the reason our pitching staff sucks. No, it isn't. Like,
no.
The pitching staff is going to get better. It was always going to get better. It doesn't matter who's catching. You could stick Chris Hatfield behind the plate and the pitching staff was going to maybe not. That was a little mean. But you can stick any sort of competent big league defender. You can stick behind the plate, or even not even necessarily anyone can catch. You can stick behind the plate, and this pitching staff, you knew it was going to get better. It was going to regress to the mean because, you know, Chris Sale is not as bad as he's shown. David Price, Porcello, all those guys are going to get better.
Price has been good.
Yeah, fair point. I shouldn't
one
have
bad
him.
Start before this one.
Yeah, but like the idea that Sandy Leon is the savior is kind of like it's crazy. It's BS. Like, he's not going to make that big a difference with the pitching staff. Are guys more comfortable throwing him? Sure, probably a few of them are, but he's not going to stop guys from throwing like middle fastballs or missing their location by, you know, 6 inches to a foot. Like, that's not going to make. He's not going to be able to change that. So.
And we're seeing it with the
pitching staff getting better already. So it's like, whatever.
And by the way, no one was hitting was the other problem.
Yeah, the lineups, well, and that he doesn't help there. I mean, they're basically carrying, before they made the second base moves, they were carrying three, basically their lineup was six hitters, and then it was three pitcher spots for the rest of the lineup because Jackie Bradley can't hit his way at anything either.
But Betts wasn't hitting either. Like, Betts wasn't hitting, Devers wasn't hitting.
That's a different story, though.
Well, like, but I'm saying that's like, why are you scapegoating Blake Swihart?
That's what the organization kind of did.
No, not you. What I'm saying. Why the organization, not you, you.
Yes, royal yes. You. Yeah, that's
no,
I agree
with you.
That's my point is, like, I think he got an unfair shake. Like, and I think anyone blaming him for the Red Sox poor start is clearly not watching the games. Like, it's not one player who is responsible. Like, and, you know, I'm happy for him that it seems like he's wanted to get traded for a while now. Cause he asked for a trade in 2017 and last year. So finally he's got his chance, and, you know, the Red Sox can move forward with the guys they have, and we'll see what happens. I mean, they've won since getting out of New York. You know, they lost their first two. They've won three in a row now, and you got the Tigers coming in. So that's a favorable schedule. So I think it's obviously they're not as bad as they've been playing. It's going to get better, but it just further sets up for going forward. Like, they're going to have to do something with the catcher. Cause I don't know how many, like, you can do it with this year, but like next year, are we going to go through the same exercise if they go out and get another catcher that, you know, if they go off to a bad start, Sandy Leon's in AAA and he's the savior again? Like, my question is, like, where does this end? Because they have to – at some point they need to develop a catcher who can actually, like, play defense and maybe hit a little bit or get him somewhere. So,
yeah,
like, I don't know. It's just
– well, I mean, I still don't think it's crazy for Vasquez to get there in a couple of years, but, like, you're going to have to suffer through him not being that to get there.
Yeah.
And I mean, okay, great. Like, and the other thing I acknowledged on Twitter too, like, look, sometimes pitchers don't want to throw to certain catchers. Fine, whatever. Like, you know, Greg Maddux didn't want to pitch to Javi Lopez. That's probably the most notable instance of this, right? He would literally pitch to anyone else in the roster but Javi Lopez. Fine. But, like, you're telling me all five starting pitchers couldn't throw to Blake Swihart? Because it's a communication thing. It's not, I don't know. It's crazy to me. This is not saying, like, and apparently this wasn't even the pitchers going to the front office and saying it, going to the coaching staff. That's what some people thought my tweets were. I was saying I thought that's what was happening. I wasn't saying that was what was happening. And clue that it wasn't what was happening, because Dombrowski came out and said the front office and the coaching staff had a meeting at the airport in, what, Baltimore or wherever they were, or on the way to Baltimore or something, on the way to play Baltimore, whatever. And they were talking about this, and they didn't even all agree on it. So it's, you know, it's, hey, you know, maybe Swihart goes to Arizona. It's a, I think it's a hitter's park, heavy hitter's park, right? Ian?
No, not as much anymore because it's got a humidor.
Oh,
but
they
it's,
put the
humidor still,
in.
It's still a better hitter's park.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's crazy. The mismanagement there. It's frustrating, you know, but whatever. That chapter is over. Wound up okay-ish. You got Marcus Wilson out of it, but whatever. That's the end of my rant. I'm done.
All right. So I think it's time. You feel better?
A little bit. Yeah. Thank you.
Do you need a cookie?
I would love a cookie. Dude, my throat is full of pollen from being outside in Frederick for 2 days. So
that's why I don't go outside.
Water.
That's why I don't go outside.
Apparently.
No, I'm just kidding. All right. Let's talk about Marcus Wilson. So
okay.
Marcus Wilson, he's interesting. I mean, he was, as you said, I don't know if you can get, can you do your host stuff and give the bio and of who Marcus Wilson is, and then we can talk about him.
Marcus Wilson is, was a young man when he was born. And no, sorry, hang on. So Marcus Wilson was ranked 20th on the Arizona Diamondbacks prospect list by both by both Baseball America and not FanGraphs, MLB Pipeline entering the season. I've got my BA handbook right here. Their list was done by Nick Picorio, who I think is a local writer there.
He's the beat writer for the Diamondbacks, for probably The Athletic now, and if not, like the Arizona Republic or something.
Yeah. So Wilson was drafted in the second supplemental round of 2014 out of high school in California. He had a great season in 2017, struggled to follow out up in 2018 with alarming strikeout totals, getting chewed up by right-handed pitchers at high class A Visalia. That's the hitter-friendly California League. He was kind of off for most of that year. So he basically spent 3 years at the short season level. His first time at the full season level was 2017, and in low A, he hit 295, 383, 446 with 9 home runs, 15 stolen bases. Last year in Visalia, Wilson did much worse, hit 235 in comparable playing time, 309, 369, 10 home runs, but just, you know, clearly a step down. Struck out about 50 more times last year than he did the year before, so his strikeout rate spiked, and he actually walked less, despite the fact that he played more. So, yeah, I mean, he's a guy where there's something there. It might not be there anymore, but it's certainly better than nothing. He reported today to Double A Portland, where they did not have a game. So he'll make his debut tomorrow on Monday, the 22nd. Mr. Ian.
Yeah, no, it's just, I mean, it's better than what I thought they would do, honestly, based on what, as we said, what they were talking about. The system doesn't have a lot of outfield prospects, as we've talked about. You have Duran, you have Gilberto, and who am I forgetting? Oh, Decker, Nick Decker. Mm-hmm. But all those guys are below Salem, so you know you didn't really have anything in the high minors coming, and so maybe, you know, who knows? They can, some one of them, different hitting coaches, different voices, you know, working with him at the plate can kind of tap into it, because he was seen as someone who was athletic with some upside in the past. So I'm interested to get a look at him and kind of see what's going on, because, you know, I don't know necessarily if there's a plus tool or anything, but he seems like someone who has, you know, some sort of potential. And as I said, like the Portland outfield was pretty barren, and so is the Pawtucket. So, yeah, it's interesting.
I'm not expecting big things out of him, but it's an interesting pickup. It's better than I thought they would do, honestly, especially based on Dabrowski's comments and on the fact they hadn't traded him yet. But Ian, should we talk about some games that we've seen?
Yes.
I suggest we start with you. You saw a doubleheader between the Pawtucket Red Sox and the AAA Buffalo Bisons. Correct.
I think it's funny that it's the Buffalo Bisons because, well, no, also because it's the Buffalo Bills and the Buffalo Bisons, and it just, I don't know, I just,
well, and it also should be, I'd chuckle.
Well, yes, but they're not necessarily the most grammatically correct teams. But anyway, yeah, so we talked about Chavis, so I'm not really going to talk about him. I saw Mike Schwarren through the first game.
Schwarren, nice.
He was I'm not going to bring it up, but he threw 6 innings. He was fine. I mean, he was Mike Schwarren. I don't know if that's like a bad thing to say, but he kind of is what he is at this point. There's just not a lot of projection. Physically, he's, you know, maxed out, and the stuff really hasn't changed for me for now going on 2-3 seasons. The fastball is, you know, 90 to 92, tops out 93, 94, keeps down in the zone. Slider is his best pitch, and he uses it a ton in the mid 80s. And then the changeup, he'll throw a couple good ones in warmups, but then for whatever reason, doesn't throw very much in the game. And yeah, I'm not sold he's a starter with his mechanics and the lack of a third pitch. I don't know if he can consistently get lefties out. Even though when I look at his splits, he's actually done a good job getting out throughout his minor league career, at least last year, I believe. So I don't know what he is for the Red Sox going forward. I kind of wonder if he's more of a trade chip, because he's another person who I think could be more effective in kind of how the Rays are using Jalen Beeks right now, as someone who comes in long relief and throws, you know, 3-4 innings in that role. And I'm just not necessarily sure if the Red Sox are interested in carrying someone like that long term. So I'm wondering if he's more of a trade chip at this point. But I mean, there's definitely a big leaguer there, which is obviously a positive outcome given, you know, he was a fifth round pick back in 2016. It's just, I'm just not sure how much upside there is long term.
Interesting with Schwarren. I mean, he's a guy, you know, his numbers this year, Ian, are pretty good, but you think that they're maybe kind of belie what he actually is.
I mean, he doesn't walk anyone. Like, he throws a lot of strikes. He can miss some bats, but
I mean, it's 16 and two thirds innings, 3.24 ERA, 1.14.
Yeah, no.
I mean, 20-3 strikeout to walk ratio.
Yeah. He does a good job keeping the ball in the yard. And that walk rate is like kind of last year it was 6% in Portland, 7.4% in Pawtucket. This year it's, you know, 4.3%. Like, he's a good pitcher. It's just there's no plus pitch, or the fastball is not plus. The slider, you could maybe, if you want to go kind, you could call it a plus pitch. It's more like a 55 pitch to me, maybe a 60. Changeup is like a 45-ish. He'll throw some ones in. The changeup's interesting to me, and it's one of those things where if he starts throwing that more, maybe I'll reevaluate. But even in this game, he threw it pretty sparingly, and I just haven't seen him incorporate it enough, because I don't know if he needs to get AAA hitters out, which I kind of think is a good and a bad thing. It's kind of the Henry Owens impact, where when he had his changeup, his was fastball changeup. He just never threw his breaking ball because he didn't need to. Schwarren doesn't really throw it because he doesn't have to, because he has the slider. And so I just don't see a third pitch. And if that takes a step forward, maybe reevaluate. But, you know, is he someone who I would be comfortable putting in the rotation to replace like Rick Porcello next year? No. And if he's not a starter long term, like with the way their bullpen is designed and bullpens are trending, unless you're other teams that are, you know, have a more different way of thinking about it, with how the Red Sox are constructing their bullpen, which is a bunch of guys who throw really hard, which I mean, I'm definitely in favor of that strategy too. Like, I think you'd be a very solid long reliever for them, but I'm just not sure if they would, they look to develop a homegrown player in that role is my question.
Got it. All right. Who else you see?
Other guys we saw that were ranked. I saw Josh Taylor. He's our, don't know where ranked. I'm looking right now. 40 something, I think.
In the 30s.
He's interesting. I mean, his fastball, he's like 94, 96, and he throws a cutter at 89, 91, that area. Throws really hard from the left side, and they don't have a lot of hard throwing left-handed prospects, especially now they've traded Williams Jerez, or they traded him last year, I guess. But without Jerez, you know, it's kind of like Bobby Pointer's the only other lefty relief prospect they have. And Pointer's just a soft-tossing, you know, lefty. So Taylor throws hard. The command is not good. Probably 30, 35 command, and the secondary pitches, he didn't show anything other than the cutter. He's got some stuff to work on. You know, he really needs to tighten up his delivery and the release point, get a more consistent one, because he also can't locate it all to his arm side. So it's an intriguing arm strength wise, but there's still, it's pretty raw and there are things he needs to work on. Other than him, I also saw Travis Lakins. I think he pitched in the second game. Lakins was better than when I saw in spring training, but I'm concerned. His stuff is still just not back to where it was last year.
Even with some good numbers.
Yeah, it's still like he was like 90 to 92. I think he hit 93 once. And, you know, last year when I saw him out of the bullpen, and at his best, he was 94 to 96, topping out at 98. And now he doesn't seem to have that velocity, and that's concerning to me. And now obviously it was cold. I should put it in perspective, the weather. It was probably 50, but with a wind chill, it was in the 40s. Like, it was gusty. It wasn't great baseball weather. So I'm not hitting the panic button or anything yet, and I want to see what he kind of looks like, you know, in like a month or two. But the velocity not coming back is somewhat of a concern to me. He mixed in a cutter in the curveball. Breaking ball was pretty good. Cutter's his best pitch. I like it a lot. And so it's just, again, it's, you know, with the way baseball's going, I'm just not – you need that type of velocity out of the bullpen. You know, it's very rare that you see righty relievers pitching in the 90 to 92-mile-per-hour range. And if that doesn't come back, you know, I'm just not sure what he is. So I'm kind of in a whole wait-and-see mode with him, and we'll see what happens going forward. At the plate, we talked about Chavis, talked about Zhu-Wei Lin earlier. Don't really need to mention him. And then Josh Ockamy, he seems changed up his swing a little bit. He's now square and, he's made a few mechanical tweaks. He's not as open as he was in the past, and he's a little he's pretty vertical with his hands high. He had a couple good swings, but he still struggles with velocity, and there's just a lot of swing and miss. And he wasn't really incorporating his lower half at all, which was interesting. I don't remember that as being the case. It was more of like hands in a swing, more handsy swing, which was a little concerning. So
he definitely he changed his body over the off season. Yeah, he's svelte now.
He's a lot more muscular.
He's a big boy, but he's not as
he's not.
I want to say he wasn't out of shape. He was just bigger.
Yeah, I agree. And so I don't really know what's going on there. It's just a 2-game sample, but the power, I mean, he seems to still have the power, but the strikeout rate is still always going to be an issue, though it is down from past years. And he is going to walk. Like, he has a good batter's eye. So we'll kind of, with him, I'm just not sure, given the Red Sox didn't protect him. First base, you have to rake these days, and I'm just not sure he's going to hit that barrier to be able to develop into a potential regular player. Other than that, the lineup is pretty poor, as we have mentioned. So there's not a lot to talk about.
Ockamy, who you just talked about. That's about it. There's not a lot there. Anything to say on Rusne?
He's never going to play in the big leagues for the Red Sox.
Unless they re-sign him.
Yeah. Okay. So no. I think you probably saw some more interesting guys down in Salem. So maybe you want to touch on those players.
Sure. Yeah, it was a great 3 days in Frederick. The weather was much better than what you just described. Yesterday was downright delightful. Sat through a doubleheader, didn't mind it at all, put it that way. The best player that I saw all weekend was easily Jaron Duran. Of course, he sat the first game yesterday when I got there, so I didn't get to see him against DL Hall of the Orioles, who's a top 100 prospect. Top 75 for most outlets, but who was apparently working on a slider and wasn't throwing his best breaking ball. So it wasn't a great outing for him, but apparently there were reasons why. But at any rate, with Duran, I mean, clear at least 70 runner on one ground ball. Scout had him at 3.96 to first, which is at least 70 speed. So he's fast. We know that. At the plate, he's aggressive, but he also can recognize spin. He can recognize spin. He can take what the pitcher is giving him, but he's still in the process of working on an approach. I liked him a lot. I didn't like him as much as I liked, the years when Salem had these loaded teams, where they had the Moncadas and Devers and Benintendis of the world. I don't like him that much. But I do like him. He's going to be in my top 10 when we do our rankings for next month, not just because of statistical output, but because I liked what I saw. In the outfield, let me finish up with the plate. I mean, he's still a little bit of a slasher. He, for those who don't know, apparently at Long Beach State, he was taught to use this wide base stance where he just got nothing on the ball. After he signed last year, the Red Sox let him go back to how he felt comfortable, and that is a true upright stance. It is almost the complete polar opposite. And while he's still a little bit of a slasher, he could put a charge into a ball. He put one out today to left field. It wasn't hit particularly hard. The ball was carrying today. So, I think this is probably the only park in the Eastern League that the ball goes out of, that ball goes out of. But that said, it's a home run. Yesterday in the first game, I'm sorry, in the second game, his first game of the weekend, he went single, double, triple, led off the game with a triple off the base of the wall where he didn't even start running until he was a quarter of the way past first base. It was crazy. I mean, he's got wheels. In the field, as we've noted, he moved to the outfield last year. He is now a full-time center fielder, it looks like. He could clearly cover a lot of ground out there. That is very obvious. He's still working on reads. The arm, we have it as average. I think it might be fringe average. Didn't love the arm. It wasn't quite Ellsbury bad, to give a comp, which I hate doing, but there wasn't a lot on it when he was throwing the ball back into the infield. There were a couple plays. There was one play where they got a guy, there was a guy hit a double, tried to go three, and there was a relay from Duran to Deaner Lopez, to Benji, to Garrett Benj at third base, and they got him, or so said the ump. I think he was probably safe, but it was mostly a Lopez thing rather than a Duran thing. So I really liked what I saw from Duran. He's definitely got things to work on. You know, a lot of Twitter replies like, oh, they need to get him to Portland now. No, they don't. Oh, they should move him back to second base so he could play second base in the majors. No, they shouldn't. That would be a waste of his speed. He could cover a lot of ground in center. I think you leave him in center field. I think, you know, he's going to need a – I could see him in Portland before the end of the year if he continues to develop. It wouldn't surprise me if it took him until July to get there and maybe got a cup of coffee in August in Portland. I wouldn't feel awful about him not getting to Portland this year. I think he spends most of next year in Portland. I think he spends most of the year after that in Pawtucket. Maybe if he ticks up, he gets there to the majors a little quicker, but this isn't a guy that's going to be in the majors next year. With the potential exception, maybe, of if the Red Sox are in contention at the end of this year, if they want to go for it, if they want to add him to the roster to steal bases, I wouldn't hate it in the Quinton Berry role. I think he's fast enough. I think he needs to continue developing on the bases. As I tweeted today, he got caught stealing on one. He had the base stolen, but kind of slid past the bag a little bit. And the infielder kept the tag on him, and he was called out. A little bit of a rough day for the base ump today, so that could have had something to do with it. I didn't have the best angle, but that said, he put himself in a position to get called out like that at least. So he's got a little bit to learn on the base paths. But I really liked what I saw out of Jaron Duran. Also, as Ian kind of alluded to, Marco Hernandez was rehabbing, which is a really nice, pleasant surprise yesterday, getting to the park, seeing him in the lineup, playing second base. He sat the second game yesterday, DH'd today. I saw one single in his two games. It was just a bloop to right field off his hands on a changeup. He was kind of rolling over pitches yesterday, had three ground ball outs today. Put the ball in the air a little bit better, long fly out to center, long fly out to left. His first couple of bats, took a walk and then rolled one over to first base. Looked like he was going to square and try and bunt a couple times. Kind of interesting, just kind of clearly working his way back into all aspects of the game.
That's just a way, like, just to see the ball.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, good point.
When you're just coming back after he's been out for, what, a full year almost? Like,
two, almost.
That's a good way to just kind of get your eyes trained. You know, you have to focus more. And he's probably, I don't know, I mean, I wasn't there, but I'm guessing he wasn't trying to bunt for a hit or anything.
No. It was, that makes sense, because he would do it and kind of pull back. So I think he was just trying to pick up the pitchers.
It's just a timing. It's a timing thing. Just kind of, as you said, just get back into the swing of things.
That's a good call. That's a really good call. Some other guys on that roster who were interesting. Ryan Fitzgerald, I was hoping would play today, but he got the day off. He played both games of the doubleheader yesterday. He looked pretty good. He was kind of the second best guy in the lineup. Can feel the position. It's an average glove, probably an average arm. He can make the throw, maybe fringe to average on the arm. Hitting wise, it's a leg lift. He has his hands up. Tendency to pull. He's already getting shifted. The Keys were pulling their second baseman back into short right field, but like true short right field, not like just on the grass. He was a good 10 to 15 feet behind the cut of the grass, and they had the shortstop playing almost true second base, maybe shading like double play depth second base. So he was in game two, he went 0-for-5 in game two. In the first three at bats, he grounded out to the second baseman playing short right field, so he grounded right into the shift. So part of you kind of wonders if some of his early season success might get negated by that shift. So it'll be how he adjusts to that will be really interesting. Took a couple walks in the first game, had a single to center, struck out on 97 in his first at bat against DL Hall. So, you know, can't really fault him for that. But he looked pretty good. He's a guy I'll be watching. He's in the 40 to 60 range for us right now. I don't know that I'd push for him to go too much higher than that. I might keep him in that range for now. But he was an interesting guy. Another guy, Pedro Castellanos. We've talked about a lot on here. We talked about Castellanos with Alex Speer. You and I have talked about him, Ian. The swing in game, I do not like. He's a guy with plus raw, and he just has below average in game power. I mean, it's a line drive swing. I saw him hit, let's see, 1, 2, 3 balls out of the infield today. You know, in the first game, he had a single that was like, you know, weak ground ball up the middle. I guess he hit this a sacrifice fly in foul territory that was caught by the first baseman that was like deep foul territory that actually they sent the runner and he scored because it was kind of a tough play for the first baseman. But I mean, F9, foul pop to the catcher, grounder to second, single through the left side, ground ball, pop up to the shortstop, fly out to left, 6-3, 6-3, 4-6, fielder's choice, line out to right field, which was probably the best hit ball he had all weekend. I don't love it at the plate, honestly. He needs to change something to get to that power better because he's just not getting to it in game. In the field, I did kind of like him a little bit. He's a big guy. He's tall. He's listed at I can see if I can pull this up really quick. Oh, the roster's right here. Yeah, he's listed at 6'3". He's taller than 6'3". I'm 6'3". He's taller than me. He uses that height very well on stretches. He's got kind of soft hands to make picks. I kind of like him at first base. Running, below average runner, but he's kind of smart on the bases. He scored from first on a double. Once he kind of gets up to full speed, when he gets underway, he can kind of run a little bit. But Castellanos, he's interesting, but he's actually probably going to fall in my rankings based on what I saw from him this weekend. I don't love it. Let's talk about pitchers a little bit. The starting pitchers, I saw three of them, which was kind of nice about getting a doubleheader. In the first game yesterday, let's see, Emmanuel De Jesus, we've got him ranked at 58 right now. He was all right. He's got four pitches, fastball, curve, change, slider. Best pitch was the changeup. So he's definitely, we're going to have to do some edits to his scouting report, Ian. I can write that up. But changeup flashed above average. Actually had some good fade to the arm side, so he's a lefty. Pretty good fade and drop, actually, when he threw it. There were times when he would slow his body up, and it would come in even slower, and it was below average when he did that. Fastball, he sat 90 to 92, kind of touched 92 a couple times, but he was 90-91, touching 92. He tired late, lost some command and control. Changeup showed the most promise. Slider was kind of a show-me pitch. The curveball was kind of a big breaker. He's added some velocity to it at 76 to 78. He was interesting. I think he's probably more of a AAA depth type. Daniel Gonzalez, another guy who's added some velo, but for a guy who's listed at, Gonzalez is listed at 6'5". He's probably 6'6", 6'5". Big lefty, soft body. His balance and posture are just, you know, it's funny. This is one of the smartest things I've ever done in my life. I printed out all of our scouting reports for these guys and put them in a binder to bring to the game. Probably looked nerdy as hell, but I don't care. It was great because I was basically just double-checking Ian's work and our previous work because some of these guys were my scouting as well. But, you know, we have it falls off hard in his delivery with poor balance and posture and an arm hook behind, and then you look and that's exactly what you see. He, like, throws, like, bent over. He kind of short arms it, doesn't get good extension for a guy of his height. He's like the anti-Denny Reyes is kind of what I would say, where Reyes, like everything plays up because he gets like 80 grade extension to the plate, whereas Gonzalez is like short arm it. And I'm like, I mean, I bet De Jesus was probably getting better extension to the plate. He's now up in the first inning. He was like sitting 90, touch 91. But by the third inning, he was 87 to 89. He only touched 90 twice in the second inning and didn't for the rest of the game. The curveball, 60 between 67 and 73. The changeup was the primary secondary. Was like 80 to 83. Okay, slows his arm a little bit. Was throwing a slider, which is apparently a new pitch for him at like 81 to 82, which I think they're probably trying to work in for him. Looked like a little bit better pitch than the changeup and curveball if he works on it. Maybe fringe average potential. But you know, excuse me, he's repeating Salem. Didn't see that much. I loved, honestly, with Gonzalez, the starter today, the best starter of the three for me was Cutter Crawford. I charted him, through 82 pitches over four and a third. And then two guys got on. So they pulled him, 53 strikes on 82 pitches, 10 swing and misses. Cutter Crawford, he's basically a two-pitch pitcher. It's fastball cutter. He throws fastball, first time through the lineup. mixes in the cutter, which is his best secondary. Cutter shows above average potential, maybe. Maybe it's a 55-ish sort of pitch. The fastball was 90 to 93. He started 91, 92 and kind of settled in 90 to 91, getting 92 when he wanted it. Cutter was 83 to 87, mostly in the middle of that range. It was his go-to pitch to try and put guys away. The fastball was pretty straight. When he was commanding it, in the first inning, he just pounded the zone. Crawford was, in the first inning, he threw 17 pitches. 14 of them were strikes, including a 10-pitch at-bat from the mayor of Frederick County, or mayor of Frederick, Maryland, Jomar Reyes, who's still there, which I can't believe, which is unbelievable. But yeah, wound up getting Reyes on a strikeout on 92, I think, up. When he's peppering the strike zone with that pitch, it plays to at least average. He has maybe 50 when he's – it's weird. When he has command of it, it's like 55, 60 command of it, but then he would like kind of lose command of it a little bit. It's like the second inning, he threw 21 pitches, only 12 of them for strikes, was a little more in and out of the zone, walked a guy, deeper counts with every batter. And at that point, he had to start relying on the cutter. He throws a curveball, which is fringe average potential. I'd call it below average, 73 to 77, really inconsistent. Like, looked like when you've got a high school kid learning a curveball, where some of them just like would like slip out of his hands and just not even break and just kind of go up and out of the zone. Didn't love that pitch. He's also throwing a change. I saw the change up. He threw a few of them, like 83 to 85. Not much velocity difference from the cutter, but that might make it a better look. But he only threw it a handful of times. He clearly doesn't rely on it. It's a show me pitch. Crawford, we've got this on here. I agree with it. He's a future reliever. I mean, it's not a starter's arsenal. It's not a starter's windup. He throws him a semi-windup. Some effort in the delivery, though perhaps not as much. We'll see. I can't see this arsenal playing as he moves up the ladder. He's a two-pitch guy, and he needs a third pitch because a fastball cutter is just not going to get it done in the rotation at the major league level. That said, he could be interesting as a fastball cutter guy if he moves into the bullpen, has the curveball as a show-me pitch, if he can get that a little bit more consistent and work on. Really, the biggest thing for me is the command of the fastball, because if he has two average to better pitches, we have two potential above-average offerings. I don't know that I saw that with the fastball. I think it's just too inconsistent. But if he can get the command better, it could be above average. So, he could get there. He was interesting. I really liked what I saw to him. Reliever rise. The other guy, two guys I wanted to mention. One was Andrew Politi. We've talked about him a little bit on here. Max effort guy. He came in and closed out the game today. Max effort, throws from the stretch all the time from the first base side. It's true max effort. I mean, if you've seen Durbin Feltman and think that's max effort, this is max effort. I mean, it's a head whack, hard recoil. Looks like he's throwing as hard as he can. He sat 92 to 94. He came out in the first inning was 94, 94, 94, straight 94. Second inning of work, he was 92 to 93. Came out, showed a slider. It was actually a lot harder. It was 85 to 87. So it's harder than he's been throwing it. I really liked the slider. I think it's a potential above-average pitch. It showed some real sharp tilt and break, especially at the higher velocity we had him from last year at 82 to 84 with the pitch. So that added some velo. He also looks like he's added a changeup and may have scrapped the curveball, although I think I saw him throw one when he was warming up. I'm not sure. I may have been confusing that with another guy who threw today. But he threw a changeup at 84 to 86. That was also interesting. That said, with his, it's a max effort delivery, but you kind of get a good look at it out of his hand. Like, it looks almost like, when you're at the batting cage and you get that arm that kind of comes up, it looks like that, where you kind of see it as it's about to come out, 'cause he's got this true overhand delivery. Batters get a good look at it, but it could be a major league arm. I mean, 92 to 94 today, we've got him 92 to 95. And I think that's what I saw in spring training. Might have been 95, Ian. I can't remember because I didn't tweet it, but I really liked what I saw out of him. The other guy I wanted to mention is a guy who's been around for a while, and Jake Cozart. He closed game two yesterday. More of the same on the fastball. He was 94 to 95 in his inning of work. He was also throwing his curve. So he has tinkered with his arsenal. Maybe not more than anybody we've seen, but it seems like he's always tinkering with it since he had success in Lowell, went up to Salem, got beat around trying to start him. They moved him back down, put him in the bullpen, and he kind of took back off again. And then he went to Portland last year, got demoted to Salem. Last year we had him fastball, breaking ball that was kind of slurvy. That's a true curveball now. It's 75 to 78. So that velo has gone tick down to it, and that's the pitch. That's the range that it was at its best at before. It looked average to me. He used to throw a changeup. In 2016, he scrapped the pitch for a splitter. Last year, we said he hadn't shown the splitter. He's now throwing a slider, which is kind of interesting. 83 to 85 with that pitch. Short 10 to 4 break. I think it's got 50 potential. I think it's got average potential. I kind of liked it. That said, time is really running out on Cosart. We'll see if the slider gets him there. Fastball, curveball, slider. It's an interesting arsenal. I get why they would have wanted the changeup or the splitter first, but we'll see if the slider works for him. Maybe he can go two pitches with that, mixing in the curve. If he's got 350, if he's got, you know, a couple of 45, 50 breaking balls and gets the fastball, maybe with a little bit more command, maybe he gets back to where we thought he could be. But he was kind of interesting to me. I just need to see him show some results over an extended period, because one look for him isn't going to be enough, just because, you know, he's got a track record. He's got to show us that, you know, he's a different guy now for a little bit longer. I actually meant to check the stats. So if you all want to look with me for the first time this year. Yeah, I mean, he's got 6 innings, 5 outings, 3 ERA, 4 strikeouts in 6 innings, only one walk, which is really good for him, 8 hits, you know, giving up some hard contact. He's got 1 home run allowed. We'll see where he goes with it, but it's interesting. Trying to see a guy like that who you've seen a lot, seen with different arsenals, seeing him trying to work something in with the slider, look kind of intriguing. But who did I miss, Ian? Anybody? That's kind of long-winded. Nope, that was a long-winded scouting update for me.
Yeah, I think that was everyone.
All right, cool. Let me see. I just realized I did not look to see if we had emails, which would have been a good thing to do before we started the podcast. And I don't believe we do, but we might. Nope, we don't. So no emails this episode, probably for the best, because we're at about 80 minutes, a little past 80 minutes. Podcast at SoxProspects.com. We want to talk about what you want to hear about. So get us your emails. We'd love to talk about that. Programming note, we will have one more episode that we'll record probably the first weekend of, we will endeavor to record one more episode between now and May the 5th. On May the 5th, I am leaving the country. I'm going to Greece for 2 weeks. So we will endeavor to get one more episode in before then. It will almost certainly not be as long, because I will need to do things like pack for 2 weeks in Greece. But we'll try to hit you back with one more episode. Ian, do you have any games on your agenda?
Yeah, I'm going to try and get up to Portland to see Wilson at some point soon. And yeah, probably that's mostly Portland now, because Pawtucket without Chavis and Lynn is not as exciting.
No, it is not. That's fair. I'm going to miss Salem is in Potomac this week, but I just don't think I can get there. I might try to get there one day if I get, I would love to catch Mata. So if the night he's pitching, if I'm able to get down there, I might try to, but, otherwise I think we, are just going to go ahead and I'm going to bag it, between now and Greece, but I've got some games when I get back that I'm going to get to. So, I think that's about it. Ian, anything else for the folks?
That's it.
All right. Well, everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Thank you again to our patrons on patreon.com/SoxProspect. Go on there. Get access to the game updates, guys. There's even more content on there, stuff that we didn't even get into on this long episode, on this now 84-minute episode of the podcast. There's stuff on there. If you're not satiated, if you're not satisfied, go on there. contribute at the $2 or higher level and you'll get access. So please, we appreciate the support of those who already are. If you want to support us, that's great. We appreciate it. That's where you can head to do that. Thanks as always to Joe Tetral, Podcast Joe, our producer, editor extraordinaire. And thanks to Ian for joining me. Thanks to the folks in Pawtucket and Frederick for their hospitality. And we'll be back at everybody soon. So thanks for listening, everyone.